It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And a little bit late, but here we are off and running on this 23rd day of June 2022. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That, of course, is where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that is, in fact, the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between, and the great globe round. And I've been on the road all day, so I've done most of the hearing as a matter of a listening exercise. And I was actually getting things set up. I had the audio and the video off for a minute. Are they done? Could somebody shoot me a message via the chat room? Because if you do pop in there right now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Ralphs and Squeaky and Theo, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space and become man cave. I know I'm late, Anatole. Oh, what a day. I've literally been on the road all day, running back and forth. It was shot day, but I couldn't get my shot, so I had to run over and take my daughter to a doctor's appointment, and then ran back to try to get an oil change, but they were closed, so I went and checked on my prescriptions, and they're back ordered, and then I went back and picked up my daughter at the doctor's office, took her home. Blew back across to Summersville to get my shot, got my shot, then had to go get the oil change stumped somewhere else, and along the way dropped it, you know, got a little dinner for Annette and Ferg and me, and because it was obvious there wasn't going to be any time for any cooking, and then literally got in here. Got in here right at the 5 o'clock hour, and so I'm thrilled and happy to be here, and I'm just trying to figure out. Okay, so they're not done. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you, Darlene in Connecticut. I was guessing they weren't. We gotta do the evening's housekeeping. So every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and. Well, this program is no different. That means we say thank you to our 23rd day of the month subscribers. Remember, we've got a new subscription challenge that says our buddy Zed and our pal Ralphs are offering to double, well, a total of 7 brand new subscribers this month. And, you know, $10 a month is really not much in the grand scheme of things. It works out to about a half a stick of gum per program or something like that. So, but anyway, nonetheless, we say thank you to our 23rd day of the month subscribers. We thank you so very much. That means thanks to Stacy and to our friends at Mellow Moonlit Meadow and our pal Philip in Maryland. And thank you very kindly jumping in yesterday to Kevin and Tracy up in Massachusetts. Where does that leave us? 1560 is where we are for the fundraising goal. And that is an entire week of broadcasting and then a little bit more. So hopefully we will take that down this evening. But with without further ado, and let me just say one thing. The day began beautifully. It was a lovely, lovely, lovely day. Because I got to meet another member of the Horn Family Community Congregation. Our friend Nidia. Nidia had come up from Charleston way and brought a friend with her, so I got to make a new friend. Hi, Wendy. And we sat and had coffee at a new coffee place down in downtown West by Cole. Nah, it's Anstead. I mean, come on. Nidia and Wendy were going to go hike the same trail that Miss Bobby and I hiked yesterday. And we stopped for coffee and had the and just had the loveliest conversation. I think we could have sat there all day, but I didn't want to do them out of their hike. So I hope Nidia, I hope you and Wendy had a lovely, lovely time going down the trail, and I hope it was every bit as lovely for you today as it was for Bobby and me yesterday. Scott in San Diego says, I have this odd feeling. I don't know what portion of a typical 3-hour Horn broadcast my $10 contribution buys, but there's this nagging sense that it's the first 12 minutes of today's show. Oh, you poor little cynic. No, that 12 minutes is on me, believe you me. So there's a bunch of other stuff to talk about today besides the hearings, but these are history-making hearings. And let me, look, I'm just going to say this before we go back to the hearings. With every one of these, and, you know, I can just say this, okay? I can just say this. With every one of these hearings, I get the nagging sensation. Well, it's not even a nagging sensation anymore. It's more like a conviction, not as in what happens in a courtroom or anything, but this sense that somewhere out there, there's some people that need to swing. And I don't mean in any enjoyable sense of the word. This is full-on treason. And it looks like not Rosen, but the other Jeff, the environmental lawyer from the civil division, that dude is stone cold busted. You know, alongside people like John Eastman, Dr. John Eastman, this is a real live attempt to overthrow the duly elected government of the United States of America. That's all there is to it. Pure and simple. I'm keeping an eye on C-SPAN, and oddly enough, you know what's clickable for me is it just starts from the beginning. Let me check another source and let's try there.
Electoral system by wildly casting baseless doubt upon it. In short, he was willing to sacrifice our republic to prolong his presidency. I can imagine no more dishonorable act by a president. We owe a great debt of gratitude to these men you've heard from here today. Real leaders who stood for justice when it was in grave peril, who put their country first when the leader of the free world demanded otherwise. They threatened to resign rather than corrupt our democracy. And thanks largely to each of them, President Trump's coup failed. Contrast that to Jeff Clark, who would do exactly what the president wanted.
Yeah,
say
Jeff
there was
Clark.
Massive fraud, forget the facts, and leave the rest to President Trump's congressional friends. Mr. Clark refused to cooperate with this committee. He pled the fifth over 125 times. Why risk self-incrimination? And President Trump's congressional friends, some of them are angling for pardons. They knew that every bit of what they did was a lie and it was wrong. That's all the more reason to respect those who came here to testify today. We thank them for their unflinching service in the face of incredible pressure. As it's said, the only thing necessary for evil to succeed is good men to do nothing. Thankfully, there were good people in the Department of Justice. You heard from other good people, too, on Tuesday. They, too, defended us. But I'm still worried that not enough has changed to prevent this from happening again.
Y'all, they're going to do it again.
The oath that we take has to mean something. It has to cut to the core of who we are and be the driving force of our service to this nation. We on this committee, we may be able to shine light on the darkness, but that is not enough. It's now up to every American, now and in the future, to stand for truth, to reject the lies wherever we confront them, in our towns, in our capitals, in our friendships, in our families, and at the ballot box, and within our own minds and hearts. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I yield back.
Without objection, the chair recognizes the gentlewoman from Wyoming, Ms. Cheney, for a closing statement.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And I again want to thank the witnesses for being here today. After today, I suspect that there will be some who label you agents of the deep state or something else conspiratorial or nonsensical, meant to justify ignoring what you've said today, ignoring the facts. That may be the short-term cost of acting honorably and telling the truth. But your actions should have an important long-term impact. They will help keep us on the course set by the framers of our Constitution. Let me paraphrase the words of John Adams and others. Whether ours shall continue to be a government of laws and not of men is ultimately for the American people to decide. And let me also today make a broader statement to millions of Americans who put their trust in Donald Trump. In these hearings so far, you've heard from more than a dozen Republicans who've told you what actually happened in the weeks before January 6th. You will hear from more in the hearings to come. Several of them served Donald Trump and his administration, others in his campaign. Others have been conservative Republicans for their entire careers. It can be difficult to accept that President Trump abused your trust, that he deceived you. Many will invent excuses to ignore that fact. But that is a fact. I wish it weren't true, but it is. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I yield back.
Again, I thank our witnesses and thank my colleagues for this hearing. As we conclude our fifth hearing in this series, I want to remind the American people of a few things the committee has shown. Donald Trump lost the 2020 election. Top Republican officials who supported Trump knew that he lost and told him he lost. Trump knew he lost. Those who say the election was affected by widespread voter fraud are lying. They were lying in 2020. They were lying in 2021. And indeed, they are lying today. Donald Trump went to court. That's the right any candidate seeking to challenge the outcome of an election must do. Donald Trump lost in court dozens and dozens of times. He lost in part because there was no evidence that voter fraud had any impact on the results of the election. To borrow a phrase from our witness earlier this week, Mr. Bowers, all he had was theories and no evidence. As I've said, if you're running for office in the United States, that's the end of the line. You accept the court's judgment, you concede the race, you respect the rule of law and the will of the voters. But for Donald Trump, that wasn't the end of the line, not even close. The voters refused to keep him in office. The courts refused to keep him in office. But he continued to lie, and he went in search of anyone who would go along with his scheme. And we've shown today he pressured the Justice Department to act as an arm of his reelection campaign. He hoped law enforcement officials would give the appearance of legitimacy to his lies. So he and his allies had some veneer of credibility when they told the country that the election was stolen. Earlier this week, we showed how Donald Trump brought the weight of the presidency down on local and state officials who were trying to do their jobs and ultimately did. They investigated his claims and found them to be false. And then they endured Trump's pressure campaign at great risk to themselves and their loved ones. And of course, there was a scheme to get the former Vice President, Mike Pence, to violate the law and the Constitution by rejecting the Electoral College votes on January 6th and blocking the peaceful transfer of power. I mentioned the former Vice President last because, as we showed, when he refused to bow to the pressure in those critical moments on January 6th, there was a backup plan for stopping the transfer of power. The mob and their vile threats. Up to this point, we've shown the inner workings of what was essentially a political coup, an attempt to use the powers of the government from the local level all the way up to overturn the results of the election. Find me the votes, send fake electors, just say the election was corrupt. Along the way, we saw threats of violence. We saw what some people were willing to do. In the service of the nation, the Constitution? No. In service of Donald Trump. When the Select Committee continues this series of hearings, we're going to show how Donald Trump tapped into the threat of violence, how he summoned the mob to Washington, and how, after corruption and political pressure failed to keep Donald Trump in office, violence became the last option. Our investigation is ongoing. Those hearings have spurred an influx of new information that the committee and our investigators are working to assess. We are committed to presenting the American people with the most complete information possible. That will be our aim when we reconvene in the coming weeks. The chair, however, requests those in the hearing room remain seated until the Capitol Police have escorted members from the room. Without objection, the committee stands adjourned.
And there we have it, the dramatic testimony today that the president was confronted by top Justice Department officials and White House lawyers about his actions in this Oval Office showdown where the president said, what do I have to lose? Why shouldn't I put this environmental lawyer with no qualifications in charge of the Department of Justice?
And you know, the funny thing when they were talking about it, I can't help it. I hear Nitwit Nero in my own stupid impression now. Can you hear it?
What do I have to lose? What do I have to lose? Somebody tell me, what do I have to lose?
But the fact of the matter is, we are, thank heaven that this committee is slowly, has slowly begun to refer to this as what it was, a coup. We will eventually, you know, if I'm right here, as I often am, we will eventually begin to refer to this as, you know, a putsch. We will. And I think history will too. Actually, when you look at the broad sweep of history, you give historians a couple, a half a millennium or so, they're liable to be talking about January 6th in the same breath that they talk about the Catiline conspiracy of the late Roman Republic, in which Cicero asked, "How long, O Catiline, shall we put up with your bullshit?" Because it seems like there's a great deal of similarity. But we are far from being where we need to be. Than we should be. And of course, they're doing a great job, the committee is, of teasing what's coming next. The problem is, this is the 23rd day of June. June will end a week from today. Friday is July the 1st, the 2nd is Saturday, the 3rd is Sunday, the 4th is Monday. And so we really have no working idea of when they will be back. And I hate to say it, but time is running out. There is so much stuff on the plate this evening, I scarcely know where to begin. But I found it interesting that, lo and behold, are y'all listening over there? Lo and behold, we were talking yesterday about Rusty Bowers and how, you know, if Donald Trump ran, I'd vote for him again, even knowing what the maggots did to his family, how they upset his daughter, how they accosted and upbraided his neighbors, they brought firearms to his neighborhood. And lo and behold, over there at My Filthy Morning Habit, well, there they were. Son of a gun. It's almost like they had, downloaded the program from last night.
Now, professor of history at Tulane University, Walter Isaacson, and Pulitzer Prize-winning associate editor of the Washington Post, Bob Woodward. He is the co-author of All the President's Men, out now in a new 50th anniversary edition with a new foreword on what Watergate means today.
So, Bob, we were talking during Watergate about how Goldwater and other Republicans went and told Nixon it was over. Of course, we didn't have anybody in the United States Senate that would do that for Donald Trump, although there were cabinet members talking about the 25th Amendment. I will say, though, these line of witnesses, these Trumpers, people who voted for Donald Trump, supported Donald Trump all the way through, but are now testifying against Donald Trump, very striking. It's almost like, I'm sure the analogy is imperfect, and you can correct me. That's why we're so glad you're here. But it's almost like a squad of John Deans coming forward to tell the truth about a cancer that was growing not only on this presidency, but that he wanted to spread to our political system, to our democracy.
It's astonishing. And I was thinking back to the Nixon era and Watergate, and you may remember this, or old timers like myself might remember it. One of Nixon's most prominent henchmen, Charles Colson, who was a special counsel in the White House, said publicly, "I will walk over my own grandmother to get Richard Nixon reelected." Now we have with Trump really literally saying, "I will walk over your grandmother to get reelected and hold power." A stunning, memorable, to me, and I think to people watching this, realize that this is exactly what Senator Sam Ervin, who ran the Senate Watergate Committee, said. It's the lust for political power. You can hear it in Trump's insistent cadence in his voice of just pushing. So is this somehow is his right or that there is a necessity in him holding power. And so now I think this will be remembered literally as Trump saying, I am going to walk over your grandmother to hold this political power, which he was not entitled to according to the law and the Constitution.
Yeah, you know, Walter Isaacson, we've been talking the past couple of days about fascism and how Trumpism is fascism. You look at the violent imagery that's used in television ads. The Washington Post says over 100 Republican candidates this year have used guns in their ads. We showed the most extreme version, one of the most extreme versions that we've seen of that. We have Republican members of Congress, Trumpists, who are using imagery that suggests encouraging violence against Democratic members of Congress. You have the threats that we heard yesterday from the testimony, people who had been threatened with violence because they wouldn't violate their constitutional oaths. Then, of course, you have the use of violence itself on January 6th, an ultra-nationalist movement that uses violence as a means to reach their political ends. If that's not fascism, Walter, I don't know what is. It could happen here. It is happening here, right now.
I mean, don't you just love this? This is just a beautiful thing. We've been talking about this for how long? And they're just now figuring it out. What did Joe Scar say? In the last couple of days, they figured out that Trumpism is fascism? You know, I don't. Did you call me crazy? But in August of 2017, when Nero was saying that Nazis were very fine people, I don't know. That sounds like a clue. But sometimes I guess it's difficult to hear through the din of all that jingling money. Because the jingle it does.
Which is collaborationism versus being able to stand up to what you talked about, authoritarianism. Yeah, I remember Vaclav Havel, when he became president of Czechoslovakia, wrote a great play about that, but it goes all the way back to Sophocles and, you know, Antigone being able to stand up to the king. We've not seen that from the Republican Party. But we started seeing it yesterday for more and more people who are greatly honorable. And I do think history is going to remember those who were collaborationists to things they knew were wrong versus those who are willing to say, no, I have a higher duty, which is what it's all about.
I mean, he said duty. I'm sorry. It was irresistible. But the fact of the matter is they finally get to... they finally got around to talking about Rusty Bowers. You know, I will say the negative partisanship, especially on the side of Republicans, really is a cancer. All they do, they run around chirping. All my friends run around chirping. But what about Nancy Pelosi? Joe Biden's president, but he's not running it. Kamala Harris is running it. It's all negative partisanship. Can you really justify somebody that you believe is not only trying to undermine the Constitution of the United States of America, but also attacking the very essence, in his words, of God's work on earth? How do you go from saying, yeah, you know, true, he's undermining my Savior's work on earth, but, you know, the quantitative easing on the left is troubling? I don't know how you square it up. And so, well, I don't know. It's kind of like that line that Paul Henry utters at the end of Casablanca when he looks at Rick Blaine and says, welcome back to the fight. This time I know our side will win. Yeah, welcome back to the fight. Well, no, welcome to the fight for the first time freaking ever, Joe Scarborough. And I'm not so sure our side will win. But we have no choice but to fight. Let me check in on the... been some emails rolling in. The J6 hearings, Kevin in Colorado Springs says, with every minute of these January 6th hearings, I realize even more strongly just how close we came to our U.S. government being overthrown. Sadly, I completely agree with you that y'all, they're going to do it again. I have strong feelings of trepidation for this November's elections. Not because I'm worried about Republicans getting voted into office, but rather because I fear these Republicans running will be screaming bloody murder about how the election was rigged against them. Even more sadly, I begin to wonder if there's anything we can do about it. Sad, very sad indeed. Thank you, Kevin. And you're right. And what I'm sorry. I know it's cynical. I know. I apologize in advance. But the thing I find interesting coming out of these hearings today in particular is you have some highly placed individuals who are well up the food chain in the DOJ power structure. And more than anything else, what they realized was, if I go along with this bullshit madness, Donald Trump may never go down. But I probably will. That's the magic moment. It's not some dewy, misty-eyed reverence for the Constitution. It's my ass will be in a sling. And whether it was Rosen or Donahue, those guys had enough brains to understand that fact. And then there's Jeffrey Clark over in the civil division in the environmental department. What was that one line from earlier today? I told him, well, you know, the only thing that elections and environmental law have in common is they both begin with the letter E, and looking at Clark said, and I'm not even sure you understand that. Holy crap! I mean, they were punking the dude. Because he was ripe for the punking. He had been tapped by Nitwit Nero, summoned to the inner sanctum, offered a Diet Coke maybe and a taco salad bowl just like the boss eats, and said, yes sir, I'll overturn the Constitution for you. I'm your guy, Mr. President. Shit, y'all, I'm gonna be the Attorney General. I'm gonna be the acting Attorney General. And then all we gotta do is have a little confirmation hearing, and I'm gonna be the Attorney General of the United States. The Attorney General of the United States. The Attorney General of the United States. I guess I'm not going to be the Attorney General of the United States. No. No, Jeffy, you're not. You may wind up going to prison, but you're not going to be the Attorney General of the United States. But you will at least have that in common, the going to prison part, with a former Attorney General of the United States, you know, John Mitchell. Because I'm sure there are absolute shit hemorrhages being had down at Mar-a-Lardass. But the calculation now is, who can we pin it on? Who's going to be the patsy? Remember the words, the very famous words of one Lee Harvey Oswald? I'm just a patsy. Well, ta-da. John Eastman's going to be a patsy. Jeffrey Clark, oh my God, Jeffrey Clark's going to be such a patsy. There was some serious shade being thrown among those. I mean, those lawyers had their claws out. I mean, there was some serious meow going on. As Scott in San Diego points out, that one witness who told Jeffrey Clark, yeah, well, we don't need you right now, but do let us know if there's an oil spill. We'll call you if there's an oil spill. And that's the other part. This is a lawyer in the environmental division for the Trump White House. I'm pretty sure Jeffrey Clark wasn't a member of the Sierra Club or Friends of the Earth or Earth Justice or the Natural Resources Defense Council. Yeah, we've never had a donation from Jeffrey Clark down at Coal River Mountain. Watch, I'm pretty sure I can say that with absolute drop-dead, rock-solid certainty. So you can imagine what he was spending his time doing over in the environmental division of the Justice Department. Kind of made me think back to some greatest hits of the Nitwit Nero administration. I wonder if anybody asked him when they unilaterally canceled the review of all the health data and the studies regarding the health impacts of mountaintop removal. I wonder if anybody ran that past old Jeffy. Or maybe they just did it on their own hook. I don't know. But Lord, it is richly, abundantly clear that this thing was planned. I mean, this wasn't Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney saying, "Come on, y'all, let's put on a play in my granddaddy's barn." I mean, it kind of came to that level of amateur status, but they were working at this, working hard. Flavio says, "I read the committee will resume in mid-July," and then going back to the clip from My Filthy Morning Habit. Said, "I can't stand Bob Woodward, who sat on his hands for a year on the revelation Trump knew COVID-19 was airborne and deadly for his goddamn book." Yeah, there's a lot of those book moments where you, hey, was this important to the Republic, or was it important to your advance? Yeah, and in regarding Rusty Bowers, Flavio says, "But I really liked what he did before COVID. Yeah, I loved the racism, the division, the corruption, the self-dealing, kissing Putin's ass. I loved it all. I'd vote for all that again." It's gonna take a lot to run the maggots away from their pumpkin-headed God Emperor. It really, really is. Because they were having so much fun being unabashed racist and homophobes and xenophobes and misogynists and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, Patsy's John Eastman, Jeffrey Clark, and don't forget Sidney Powell, Ralphs reminds us. And again, there's no Howard Baker. There's no Barry Goldwater, as they reference. That's not there. There's nobody to sit down and look, who was able to just forgive it up. Forget it. And I'm sorry, the rehabilitation of Bill Barr to prosecution does not impress. I mean, thank you for telling something resembling the truth in a bold and unflinching effort to rehabilitate your boot-licking career, Bill, but no. In regards to Trump will walk over your grandmother, Lee in New York says, "Actually, I would expect it to be Trump will drive a golf cart over your grandmother." Yeah, true. He might stumble while he was walking over Granny. And so we wait. And the key to all of this, I don't know what they're doing up there. I don't profess to. But it ain't that long till November. I'm not good at ciphering, but I know that 11 minus 6 is 5, and it's almost 11 minus 7 is 4. And if, as the for-profit media keeps prophesying, the Republicans are going to take over the House, it'll get mailered. It'll all come to nothing, Mr. Finch. Nothing. And then there's Merrick Garland. I don't know if you noticed, but Andrew Gillum, the guy who came within a few thousand votes of becoming governor of Florida and might likely have been governor of Florida were it not for the fact that Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis had some significant assistance from real live, no kidding, Nazis. But Merrick Garland's Department of Justice down in Florida has just indicted Andrew Gillum. The usual stuff, the easy stuff. This isn't even terribly complicated. Of public corruption. That's what the Department of Justice charges when they can't really make much of anything else stick. Because it's an easy get. Well, how do you know he's corrupt? Because we said so. And I heard that, and I have no idea as to whether Andrew Gillum is guilty or not. But I do know this. Whomever is working on the Andrew Gillum case in Florida out of the U.S. Attorney's office there, as sure as God made little green apples, and if you eat too many of them, they'll give you a bellyache and the runs, ain't working on anything having to do with another U.S. citizen ensconced down in Florida, namely putrescent pumpkinhead Trump down at Mar-a-Lardass. Capacity is a real thing. Whether it's an organization as large as the Department of Justice or a little grassroots political organization, you can only do as much as you can do. And every instant of time that is pissed up a rope chasing Andrew Gillum is time that is not being spent building a case against a man who fomented a coup against the constitutional governance of the United States of America. And so, frankly, I don't care to hear any more breathless press releases from U.S. attorneys, especially not in Florida, braying about somebody else's criminality. I mean, Jesus, Merrick Garland, read the room. And really doing it during Juneteenth week? Was that an accident? And speaking of Juneteenth, let's toddle up to a little community called Millinocket, Maine. In Millinocket, Maine, which is, I guess, maybe about, 50 miles or so. It's not far from the Canoodlian border. This past Monday, Harry E. Reed Insurance Company on Penobscot Avenue in Millinocket put a sign on the door that read, oh, I'm so sorry. I apologize for even reading this out loud. This just makes me feel dirty. Gross. But whoever they are at Harry E. Reed Insurance Company put a sign on the door that said, Juneteenth, it's whatever, we're closed. Enjoy your fried chicken and collard greens. Well, as a hillbilly white girl, let me just say that I am damned fond of fried chicken and collard greens, but I mean, really fond. It don't get between me and the collards and the pot liquor, and a bottle of malt vinegar or hot sauce. Don't do it. There will be problems. But that's not exactly what they had in mind at Harry E. Reed Insurance Company on Penobscot Avenue in Millinocket, Maine. No. And now, of course, they are pissing and moaning at Harry E. Reed Insurance Company and complaining that they just ain't understood. 30 years ago, Melanie Higgins' mama, Karen, bought Harry E. Reed Insurance Company. It's a mother-daughter operation now. And they're terribly upset. It was Melanie who put the sign that read, Juneteenth is whatever, we're closed. Enjoy your fried chicken and collard greens. Well, Melanie has now pogo-sticked up onto the cross to say, I would never purposely set out to hurt anyone, and I would never purposely set out to hurt my mom's business at all. She had nothing to do with this. And then they put up a second sign. To our clients in the town of Millinocket, we are deeply sorry. Yeah, hold on. There it is. We are deeply sorry for the turmoil our door sign has caused this community. The person has been reprimanded and is truthfully sorry to all. Please understand that this post never meant any racist suggestion or meant to hurt anyone. Well, we would never intentionally hurt anyone. Again, we are very sorry if we have offended anyone. Oh, there's the tell, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, yes, yes, children. There's the tell. We are deeply sorry. We are very sorry if we have offended anyone. Yeah, there it is. The good old-fashioned American Republican non-apology. We're very sorry if we offended anyone. Yeah, I think by the time they got around to putting up that sign, it was pretty clear that a lot of people were offended. We put up a sign every time the office is going to be closed and say something about the holiday. And Melanie Higgins says she's tried to make them a little bit more comical and lighthearted. During the difficult time that's been the pandemic. And she talks about food in other signs. Like from Memorial Day, when she said, thank you to all service members for your sacrifice for this country, a country now that is going to hell in a handbasket faster than my dog stealing a piece of pizza off the counter. Now that I mention pizza, I'm craving it. Remember, the more you weigh, the harder you are to kidnap. Country's going to hell in a handbasket, huh? You mean this past Memorial Day? Did you put a sign up like that during the lockdown, the Memorial Day, say, 2020, Mills? Did you, hon? No? Didn't think so? Making America great again. Have yourself a taco bowl this Cinco de Mayo. She went on to say, I truly apologize. I'm mortified that this is even happening. And she only said collards and fried chicken because she was in a hurry to go home for the weekend. And then the obligatory Republican tears. We are receiving death threats. We are receiving phone calls calling us really inappropriate words. What? Republicans? Maggots? Racists? I don't think they're inappropriate in that instance. And the upshot is that once the news broke of this ugly bit of business, well, Allstate Insurance, this was an independent insurance broker, so they carried multiple lines of insurance. Allstate has broken off its relationship with Harry E. Reid and the mother-daughter Higgins team. And so, too, has Progressive Insurance. With Progressive saying, we're aware and appalled by the sign recently posted at the Harry E. Reid Agency and are terminating our relationship with the agency at Progressive. Diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, are fundamental to our core values. That came from Progressive spokesperson Jeff Seibel, who continued and said, we're committed to creating an environment where our people feel welcomed, valued, and respected, and expect that anyone representing Progressive to take part in this commitment. The sign is in direct violation of that commitment and doesn't align with our company's core values and code of conduct. And Allstate also said, We're terminating our contract with this independent agent. Our commitment to inclusive diversity and equity is non-negotiable, and we take action when individuals violate our code of conduct. And so that's when the non-apology apology started. Once they learned through the tender, fleshy parts of their wallet. Yeah, I'm not going to say that, Flavio, but you're probably not wrong. Yeah. Oh, well, Arthur, shame on you. That gets you a cowbell. Milla knock it till you try it, Robin. Oh, God, that sounds like something that giraffe would come up with. Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, Steve, from Georgia Stan, Brother Bishop Steve, all-around great guy and pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator. Brother Bishop Steve says, Harry Reid Insurance wrote most of their business for Flo. Just so you know, Flo fired them. Yeah, progressive. Good on you, Flo. I wonder if they carry the insurance that's hustled by that little lizard. Where's the lizard? Say something, lizard. You're all the time talking on the electric TV box. Yeah. So we got that, but that is by no means not. And this one just there is a. I have an inner copy editor. She lives within me, and she pays, and she's the one who's all into the art of word knowing. And sometimes you run across a story, and you know it's not really worth going through the entirety of the story. It just is what it is. But there's something about it that just makes you want to at least make the briefest comment. A story from The Hill a few days ago. And it was the headline that got me going. Number of Americans who believe in God dips to new low. And the copy editor in me just wanted, it was just aching to write a subheading. While Christianity itself sinks to new lows of all of its own. Yeah? Do you like that? Because I like that. I was kind of proud of that. Number of Americans who believe in God dips to new low. Members of Christian religions that believe in the same God are taking their churches to new lows. That's all. Not going to go into the story. That's all. But that was just that was just too damn good. Yeah, pardon me, writes Scott in San Diego. From the Washington Post, multiple Republican members of Congress asked White House officials if President Donald Trump would preemptively pardon them for their activities in the lead-up to January 6th before he left office. Testimony provided by Trump White House aides to the January 6th committee shows. The members included Representative Matt It Just Gets Worse, Florida. Oh, by the way, they got around to indicting a guy who lost a gubernatorial election, Merrick Garland did. But somehow or another, they still haven't gotten around to indicting a guy who stone cold, no kidding, paid an underage girl for sex. I guess that's not quite the slam dunk that some bullshit public corruption charge is. But Matt Gaetz asked for a pardon. So did Mo Brooks Les Brames of Alabama. Andy Biggs of Arizona wanted one too. So did Louis Asparagus Gohmert of Texas, and representing Scott Perry of Pennsylvania, Bamistan. The allegations came from Cassidy Hutchinson, an aide to Trump Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, and John McEntee, a close aide to Trump. It's raining dimes over there, y'all. I mean, they're dropping dimes on it. No, I didn't do it. They did it. No, fuck them. I did. No, you. I ain't going to prison without you going with me. I hate to go without no company. I hope it doesn't hurt too little. But Lord. Yeah, Lee in New York says, Geico, will the gecko say, just go? P.S. Progressive hurt their cash flow. Oh. Lee, you're better than this. Yeah, Arthur says, if you dumb bitches were offended, then I guess I'm sorry. If anyone was offended, they're guessing? Right. And we will be getting on to this story as well. Ron and Raleigh says, one down. Today, SCOTUS decided that anyone who wants to pack concealed heat may do so. I think that certain parts of the Bronx and Brooklyn may become a free fire zone. And look, and there are unintended consequences. Of course, this is nothing but an exercise in the law of unintended consequences. The Supreme Court today, those six wild-eyed maniacs from the Federalist Society, judicial cut purses and foot pads and highwaymen and punks and thugs. Yeah, and the funny thing is, the law wasn't even a law anymore. But because they are such hardcore right-wing Federalist Society ideologues, the Supreme Court took up the case anyway, even though there was no longer any case or controversy. That's some of that nerdy federal court stuff that you have to learn, like second or third year law school in federal courts. And you learn about jurisdictional amounts and how there has to be a case in controversy and how the courts don't issue advisory opinions. Why do I still remember so much of this? Yeah, well. There was nothing to adjudicate, but by God, the Supreme Court decided to adjudicate it anyway. And so, yeah, America is a free fire zone now, thanks to people like Sammy Bad Breath and Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas and Brat. And yeah. Of course, they're never going to have to worry about it because they've got an entire phalanx of security around them and nobody's ever really going to get through to them. I gotta, you know, I'm sorry, but I can't help wondering about the rest of us. Because I'm pretty sure that we're just going to be left to fend for ourselves out here in the free fire zone. Well, what you need to do is go out and buy you a Freedom Protector. Robin, get yourself one of them holster bras, why don't you? Yeah, because I don't want to shoot myself through the heart like some idiot Republican in Michigan did, for starters. I mean, but, yeah. But the other part of it, the law of unintended consequences part, is now the cops have even more reason to be afraid.
Well, I mean, everybody's allowed to carry a concealed weapon in New York now. I didn't know.
Wrong accent.
I didn't know whether they had a gun or not, so I figured shoot first and ask questions later.
He had a bag of Skittles.
Looked like a gun to me. I was scared.
And maybe going forward, when cops get charged with blowing away unarmed citizens in the wake of this ruling, maybe we need to change a little bit of legal language. Instead of referring to it as a reasonable use of force defense. Change it to the I was plumb skeert piss pantsed defense. Make them say that out loud. Big, bold, brave, you know. I was so plumb scared I done peed myself. That one. You sure the consequences are unintended? Darlene asks. The SCOTUS just made civil war more likely. Well, you may be right. You may be right. But here's, you know, and I've raised this issue in the past, but I think it bears raising again. I think that people who are opposed to firearms in this free fire zone that the Supreme Court of the United States has created, and by the way, is there anybody in the House of Representatives with the courage to impeach at least Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas? And, oh, by the way, when they were talking about Jeffrey Clark today, I had a real little giggle. Because there was testimony about how they were talking to Nitwit Nero and said, are you sure you want to elevate this guy to be the Attorney General of the United States, the acting Attorney General? Guy has never tried a case in his life. He has practically no courtroom legal experience. He's never handled so much as a traffic ticket on the criminal law side of things. Well, I was pulling into the driveway at that point. And as quick as I could get the car into park, I just sat and had me a proper guffaw. Wait, you're kidding, right? They were talking about a guy having no experience trying cases. No criminal law experience whatsoever. Anybody want to look up the resumes of several different members of the Supreme Court of the United States who somehow made it to the sweetheart list of the Federalist Society? Anybody? Bueller? I haven't practiced law in a long time, but I've got more legal experience than fucking Justice Handmaid. Cuter, too. Oh, I should have left that part out. That was kind of meow, wasn't it? But really, actual courtroom experience is not, oddly enough, is not on any Republican. No, we just need you to go in there and turn the women's into, and the people who can be pregnant, turn them into second-class citizens. How much, yeah. No, Randy, let's square this away. A simple majority in the House of Representatives is sufficient to impeach. Donald Trump stands twice impeached. Make no mistake. He was impeached twice by a majority of the House of Representatives. Because Randy says, doesn't it still take 67 votes in the Senate to impeach? No, it takes 67 votes in the Senate to convict. But putting an asterisk by Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas, or anybody else, saying that they had been impeached, well, it might mean more to them than it would to, say, Nitwit Nero. Because the only thing that matters to Nitwit Nero is power and money, in no particular order. Probably money and power. And, of course, his own fragile, tender, snowflakey ego. But it might make a difference with a Supreme Court justice. And we and Lord knows, Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas, has been allowed to sit there and defecate all over the court, the Supreme Court's history and traditions. Let's use a technical term, too fucking long. And of course, like I said, there's still more dirty business to be done. I had a note earlier today from our dear friend Joy in Ann Arbor. Do you think Garland is worried that if he brings charges against the dump cabal, that 30% of the country will erupt into a riot? I think he would be probably, well, you know, he's supposed to act as Attorney General of the United States without fear or favor. You know, what you're talking about there, Joy, is the fear part. He's supposed to just do the right thing. But then again, he's tasking lawyers in Florida with chasing after political corruption from some black dude who lost an election instead of tasking them with chasing down every last goddamn maggot in the state of Florida, including the head maggot. Or Matt Gaetz! So there's a little more capacity that will not go to actually securing the viability of the republic. Is he afraid? I think he has to know, Joy, that that's a distinct possibility. They've been saying it all along. Meal Team 6 will be in the streets. And they may mount another insurrection just as quick as the hot now sign goes off at the goddamn Krispy Kreme. Joy adds, because SCOTUS is certainly not worried about the consequences of seizing possession of the bodies of 51% of this country's population and forcing them to leave their careers and lives and get back into the kitchens and nurseries to have a baby every year like our great-grandmammies did. Truth. Robin, I really mean this from the bottom of my soul, but I don't see people understanding or discussing how very different our society is going to be very soon. Women will not be able to pursue careers. They will have to choose between having a sex life or having a career. I'm horrified at how far back they're turning the clock. Once they get rid of birth control and enact a personhood bill, we'll be in big trouble. In addition, I will say yet again, this goes beyond women. If the government can seize one of its citizens' organs for its use, it can seize any of them from anyone. I'm sick of seeing well-meaning men say they'll be our allies. Honey, y'all won't be allies. Your organs are going to be up for grabs, too. We can't let up on this. Fuck everyone who let that orange shit beast come to power and break my country, imperfect as it was. I'd rather live in a flawed democracy than in a perfect fascist theocratic dictatorship. Amen, amen, and amen. And let all God's children say, amen. But that's what's at stake. You know, because sooner or later, even as perverse as they are, the theocrats are going to get around to explaining to men who have a little problem, you know, with the stiffy, that God don't want them to have dick hardening pills. And by then, it'll be too late, because they will have consolidated their hold on power. Eventually, they will all turn on each other in a purity-driven spasm. But I don't even know if we'll get to watch that go down. We may all be in camps or whatever's left of us in ovens by then. And I am not overstating the risk. You know, Joy mentioned, you know, having one kid every year like our grandmammies did. She's not exaggerating. I've told the story before about how with her last child, my great-grandmother tried to kill herself. She just couldn't do it. But they dragged her back home and forced her. And, you know, you look, and that's the thing. If you go back and read Roe v. Wade, there's actually a digression in there in which the majority talks about how abortion has always been a factor in human societies. Women have always known how to deal with a problem pregnancy, especially like hunter-gatherer societies and the like. There were granny women, root doctors, yarb doctors, and the yarb doctors knew which roots and which berries and which leaves would boil into a tea that would make a woman go into premature labor. It's only with the rise of patriarchal states that becomes a problem. But yeah, there's a discussion in Roe v. Wade's text about exactly that. And of course, if you read the draft opinion that came out, you know that that is poo-pooed by Sammy Bad Breath, who is just so goddamned angry at every vagina haver in the entire world. And, oh well, and of course, and I know Joy knows this, we all know this, abortions will always be there for the well-heeled. You know, the megachurch pastor's daughter who gets unfortunately pregnant down in Alabama or Mississippi Stan or Texas Stan. She'll always be able to go somewhere else and come back and say that she had a lovely vacation and she shopped so much. Oh, she just loved going shopping in New York City. But remember, the misogyny freaks, and that's what they are, aren't they? These people who oppose abortion don't oppose abortion. They oppose women, period. They are misogynists. And they're not going to stop by saying, well, you know, at least we stopped abortion in Alabama and Mississippi and Oklahoma Stan. No, once they've done all of that, as I've said time and time again, they're going to go after California. They're going to go after New York. They're going to go after Massachusetts, Washington, Oregon, Maryland, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, etc. And because they have divided and because they have conquered, They will eventually create an encirclement, and they will succeed, because the next step after this is to outlaw abortion in the entirety of the United States. But white women will always have access to abortion in another country, you know, one that's civilized. And we just won't talk about it. Yeah. You know, while I was over there in that Dutch land, I got to see some of the prettiest paintings. I mean, they're all kind of dark and shit, but I mean, they're still really that Rembrandt van Rijn. I mean, he could he was hell with a paintbrush. He'll always be there. You know, when Brat's daughter gets in a family way, sure, she'll be able to jet off to Stockholm. I just love ABBA. That's what I was over there for. It was an ABBA tribute band that was playing up above the Arctic Circle on the solstice. And the same will go for Justice Handmaid. then again, you don't know. You don't know what those little girls are having to put up with. And maybe they won't. Maybe it'll be something far more evil and far more awful. And everybody who said that that the right is a woman's right will grieve, because those cases will be there too. But of course, it's not just it's not just females of childbearing age. No, no. Let's consider the matter of Republican, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian Republican Senator Roger Marshall of Kansasstan. And he's on the verge of a sure enough hissy. He is willing, because see, there's some urgency to this one particular piece of legislation. Funding, current funding for school meals, not just lunches, but school meals, runs out on June 30th. And so the Congress is trying as quickly as they can to extend funding to keep literally millions of children in the United States from going hungry. Now, previous efforts to extend the bill have been dashed by the people who claim that they reverence life. And of course, the bill will have to be voted upon in the House, and it will pass easily in the House. But then it has to go to the blood-sodden, dust-covered desk of the man who really controls the Senate of the United States. And I mean, the worst thing ever to belly flop or crawl or slither out of Colbert County, Alabama, Addison Mitch McTurtle McConnell. And see, over in the Senate, just one senator, one good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian Republican senator can consign millions of American children to listening to their own bellies rumble at night. And so, this past Tuesday, Democrats unveiled a plan that would extend the food program beyond that was first introduced during the pandemic, the teeth of the pandemic. And that's when Roger Marshall, senator from Kansas, found his way to a microphone and said he was thinking about objecting to it. Because if this thing does not pass without objection, again, millions upon millions of children in this country go hungry. White children, mostly white children, but black children, Latinx children, indigenous children, Asian children, male children, female children, a hungry belly is not a respecter of persons. And why is he thinking about maybe objecting to this piece of legislation? because the new guidance coming from Joseph Biden's Agriculture Department, which administers school meal programs, says that any program that receives federal nutrition money is forbidden from engaging in discrimination against LGBTQ people, including children. And so last week, Roger Marshall joined a little cancerous knot of other weirdo Republican senators. And wrote a letter to the GAO. Who were the aforementioned weirdos? Roger Marshall, John Barrasso of, what is it, Wyoming? James Lankford of Oklahoma Stan. Tom Cotton, fascist dictator wannabe from Arkansas. And of course, the letter would not be complete without the autograph of 3X Marsha. Goodness, Blackburn. What are they upset about? Well, on the one hand, the document claims that the interpretation outlined in this memo does not determine the outcome of any particular case. The fact remains that this new memorandum will have an impact on all food and nutrition programs, state agencies, and program operators. The document indicates unequivocally that the certification of applicant households for SNAP shall be conducted without discrimination on the basis of gender identity and sexual orientation. No, really? Here in the year 2022 of the Common Era, Republicans find it objectionable that state SNAP evaluations are forbidden from discriminating against hungry children on the basis of their gender identity and sexual orientation. Because you know what the little gay kids need to do? Starve! Just like Pastor John Hagee has said from his filthy pulpit in San Antonio. Starve! Yeah. Christians. Yeah. Because they won't be happy until all the gender non-conforming and gay kids' ribs are showing. Jesus loves the little child. Oh, wait, there's probably a reason we've got a goose egg in the program this evening. What did I say, 15:30? Something like that? Yeah. Well, I tell you what, them some Christians, them Republican Christians. Oh, we're halfway through the program. Let's run over to the stress line, shall we? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Robin.
Hey!
This is Emilio, or Arthur.
Yes. Wow, is this first-time caller material?
Yes, that's
right. Cool. Well, it's great to talk to you.
And then I wasn't ready for the transition, though. Anyway, I don't know.
Well, listen. But before we get too deeply into it, are you on a speakerphone? You're a little bit muddled.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's try to go to the handset. It might work better.
All right. How about that?
Immensely better.
Okay, good. Yeah. I don't know. I wish I could start I've been thinking of starting a YouTube channel, but at the same time, it seems crazy to me. I think about things all the time, you know, like conversations about politics and things like that. But at the same time, I don't want to show myself.
Well, elaborate.
I don't know. I just think a lot about a lot of the things that you talk about on the show. You know, like the politics and culture and like really deep stuff. But at the same time, I don't want to get like the death threats or the harassment or all that kind of stuff. And also, I'm not a very outgoing person, so I don't know what to do.
Well, what is it that you feel like you do want? I mean, I know you said start a YouTube channel. Build on that.
I mean, the other thing is I also would like to make some money out of that because I'm not exactly happy with where I'm working, but yeah, I mean, I have a hard time sometimes expressing myself.
You're doing just fine. You're doing just fine. But I will warn you, this is no way to get to that first Gulfstream 5.
No, I understand this. I understand it's work because you have to put content out every week or whatever. But at the same time, I think about these things all the time and I see other people doing it and I'm not happy with where I'm working right now. So I don't know.
Well, if you want to talk about it, you know, email me, whatever, you know, we can talk about it. I'm happy to. But,
yeah.
You know, it's weird. I think there really aren't that many 3-hour-a-day programs left. And what you said, you know, every day or every week or whatever, you know, there's a lot of people that only do this, you know, once a week or once every couple of weeks. Some of them do it, you know, put out content every few months.
Right.
But the everyday thing, I'm not tooting my own trumpet, but it requires a substantial amount of dedication.
I understand.
I mean, I can tell you, 18 years, actually. You know, I came back to the air filling in for Dr. Bill in 2003 in America's fifth smallest radio market. And so I guess next year will be my 20th anniversary coming back to broadcasting. But this, you know, this is manifested. I started, you know, doing 3 hours a night in February 2004. So we actually passed the 18-year mark this past February. But it's hard, and it's a saturated it's a saturated market. And if you don't have somebody out there selling ads, or if you don't have the internet savvy to really monetize your brand, it's hard. I mean, you hear what the fundraising's like here every night. But I think if I understand correctly, the bottom line is that you just sit around and want to yell a little bit sometimes, right?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, sometimes I have like conversations in my mind of like a debate that someone's having or something like that, you know, like a retort that I would have to these kind of people, the kind of people who are always complaining about the, you know, the new right that's out, I'm a smart person. I'm a bright person, but at the same time,
absolutely,
I'm dysfunctional. And so it's like sometimes I just don't know what to do with myself.
Believe me, you are not alone in that. You know, it's so funny. Whatever it is that we talk about on any given evening here, I promise you, there are probably 30 other stories that I didn't get around to. Because it's just it's a torrent. And unless you just want to do a 20-second reader on every story and not try to delve into any of the nuance or any of the depth of it, you can't get to it all. And a lot of them are worthy stories, Emilio.
Yeah.
And sometimes I let them sit in the stack, and you know, a couple of weeks later there will be a reason to bring them up, and I'll just credit that to the goddess of irony or the universe or whatever.
Right. Or also, like, sometimes I'll watch TYT, and, like, you'll have some kind of call for people who make content or something like that, right? And I don't know, it's like, I don't have a degree, I feel like I can't call them and say, hey, it should be me or something like that, you know, it's like...
Well, the key to that is to have something to put in front of them to show them that you can do the work. But by the same token, that's freelance work, and it don't pay that great.
Yeah.
That's where you get the thrill of hearing your name used without them, and they're very well funded, without them having to pay you much. I mean, that was the ancient complaint about, Daily Kos.
Uh-huh.
You know, making a fortune off of really good content creators and really good writers without having to pay them. That became a real knock for a very long time. I think maybe they finally did begin to remedy it to some degree. But the hard... Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you.
I guess for me, the hard part is, you know, it's sort of like me. It's very hard for me to say, hey, I'm very bright, or hey, I'm smart, I'm a genius, or something like that, because I don't like saying that. And obviously people who actually are smart don't say that. But of course, I know that's like the polar opposite of, you know, like some con man like Trump, who's like, I'm the smartest guy in the world, where everybody knows he's a complete idiot.
Well, right, exactly, and the prime example of that is the Prince of Pineapples now, Rusty Limbaugh, who used to go on the air every day and say, "My friends with half my brain tied behind my back and talent on loan from God." Yeah, you've got to have that sort of shameless self promotion aspect, and I frankly suck at it. I can't do that.
I
just can't.
I mean, I am very bright, but I mean, I'm literally bright, but it's very painful to say, it's very uncomfortable to say that. And obviously it's like, you can say that, but then it's like, people are like, okay, show me.
Oh, I get it. Believe me.
Yeah. But I guess we'll talk about this more at some other time. But I mean, I've also mentioned to you that I really like the idea of, like, if you had like a GoFundMe or something like that, and you say, well, it doesn't work very well for me because the way they set things up, right?
Well, yeah, GoFundMe is either 30 or 60 days, and if you don't make the whole goal, you don't get a penny.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, Kickstarter, GoFundMe. GoFundMe, it can be long running. Kickstarter is 30 or 60 days, and you don't get a penny if you don't get the goal.
Yeah, but it's like, I think you should like do four of those or something like that a year, and not set like a huge goal, but maybe just $1,000 or $5,000. I mean, you know, so many people, and if you ask people, people will contribute. I mean, that's the thing that I do. I always contribute when I hear the call, but if people don't hear the call, then they sort of relax or assume, you know, that everything's fine. And
Well, believe you me. I'm out here every blessed night, or day, or afternoon, or evening, and you know, trying to just keep the lights on, and that has worked to a certain extent for rather a long time. And then, you know, the GoFundMe is for a specific purpose. Like it related to last year, it related to oral surgery and then me being able to survive while I was having my other surgery. And what I'm looking at now is doing a new one expressly for the purpose of being able to have health insurance.
I remember that.
Yeah, because right now I don't. And in fact, when I got to meet with her today and meet her in person for the first time, you know, Nidia and I were talking about that a little bit because I had so much fun at the first Hornin. I would love it if we could make a certainty out of having Hornin 2 2023, the adventure continues, and have a real showing of people. You know, folks that people want to meet. You know, certainly not just me. And I'm in the process of trying to evaluate whether or not that can happen.
Right. And with the one that you already did, I mean, I was always interested, but it just didn't work for me at the time. And
sure.
I didn't have that extra money for that, and et cetera.
Yeah, it was a tall ask.
My whole idea was, with that suggesting is just that it's like a supplemental thing that you do, because otherwise it's just going to be like that every day. I think it's the way it is now, where it's like, so it's like $1,000 or $1,500 behind or something.
Well, I mean, it hasn't always been that way, but it is now. And maybe some of that'll improve after November, because again, this has been going on long enough that I can see how the trends develop. Now that we're in perpetual campaign mode, I don't know if it does change. But during campaign years, every politician with a dream has their hand out.
Yeah. And yeah, that's important too, because we have to support the few people that are out there that are worth supporting.
Right.
Yeah.
Precisely. Well, Emilio, it has been lovely hearing from you for the first time. I hope it won't be the last. And let me just say, I love your first name, because you know that's one of those names that's lasted through millennia, and of course, some of the greatest Romans of history shared your name. And yeah. One of the great Roman highways great Roman roads was the Via Aemilia.
Yeah. It's funny because sometimes one of the other things that I thought about lately is doing comedy, but again, I guess I'd have to first overcome my fear of putting myself out there.
Well, and the only way to
because
do that,
I do have a pretty good sense of humor, and
oh, you do. You have a razor sharp wit, and the only way to get started in that is to get out there and get your ass kicked and fail and determined and go back and tinker with what you're working on, and fix it and fix it and fix it and fix it. Comedy is a brutal business. That's why I don't do it.
Yeah. I'll try to. I'll call in some other time. I don't know when, but yeah, I'll try not to make it just once.
Okay. Yeah.
Any
time the spirit moves you. Okay. I mean, go back and listen. You have survived your first call. It's not nearly as daunting and terrifying as ever so many people think it is.
Right.
You know, your heart rate may be up a little bit when you hang up. You know, maybe you're popping a couple of beads of sweat on your forehead. But no, you're fine. You're fine. And you've done fine. And I'm looking forward to this becoming a more regular conversation.
Sure.
All right, Emilio.
I've also wondered if I should open Facebook or something, but I don't have one.
Oh, God. I can't advise on that, but, you know, pretty much the only reason I'm on social media is just to be able to communicate with the people who listen to this program.
Yeah. That's true.
Because social media is, I'm looking for here? A sewer.
Yeah. For sure. All right, I'll let you go.
All right, you take care, Emilio. Good hearing from you.
All right, you too.
Bye now.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I've been getting emails from, and I call him Earther because that's just the way but that's our pal Emilio, and we've been corresponding for a very long time. And after all this time, to finally get a phone call is just wonderful. Just wonderful. And let's bebop over to the Skype line. Scott, what's up?
Man, our lady, I'm telling you, there's something about the way the universe works. I am so happy that Emilio called, and for what Emilio shared with the Horn family. And I, believe it or not, and I'm glad you took Emilio's call first, okay, because then I could hear what was going on. I've got some good news for you, Emilio. I hope your little ears perk right up when I go into this. You know, speaking truth to power involves saying words, and behind the words are concepts and thoughts and beliefs and heartfelt desires and things like that. But it all starts with the word, okay? And unless you have a tape recorder talking into it, you're not going to capture them. You've got to capture them first. You've got to pen those suckers right in and put them in the right order and then share them. And I'll tell you two great places to do that. One is Facebook. I know Robin says it's a sewer, but life, after all, is like a sewer. What you get out of it depends on what you put into it.
Oh, exactly. Well played. Well played, exactly. Scott.
Thank you. And see, Facebook, I take the parts that work for me and just ignore the rest of it. I've been on Facebook like 11 years, and I've had people messaging me on Facebook and private messaging me on Facebook saying that they just cannot believe my wordplay. Some of the stuff that I write on, and even Robin has commented on it from time to time. It is a lovely way to strengthen your chops when it comes to gathering your thoughts together, putting them in a cogent order, and then sharing them with the known universe. And there's a lot of power in that, especially when you start getting feedback. And not everybody is going to like what you've got to say, but that's all right. Screw them. I mean, God bless them, but screw them if they don't get their head together.
Or as we used to say, joke them if they can't take a fuck.
That too. So Facebook, if you're not on it, get on it, because it'll help you organize your thoughts. It'll help you share in powerful ways that you can't even imagine. Another place online that I found out about a few years ago from Phil Proctor, who was part of the Fire Sign Theater comedy group back in the 60s and 70s, is this online place called Quora, Quora.com. And it's a place for knowledge and information and sharing it. And I like to monkey with the Trumpanzees, you know, because they're still on there. When was the election, Robin? In November of 2020? And they're still moaning and complaining that he lost. And every now and then, it's in a question format. People will post questions about all manner of things, but I kind of concentrate on the politics. And they'll say, well, if Biden really won, da 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 da, and they'll have this some dumb premise that Trump or his supporters are trying to push. And occasionally I'll chime in and just run rings around them logically. So check out Quora and check out Facebook and comedy. Oh, man, if the world needs anything right now, It's to laugh out loud. Get a pain in your side, you're laughing so hard. So if you're geared in that direction, do that too. Most, I don't know if Emilio said where he was calling from, but most towns of any size have a comedy club. And most comedy clubs have a amateur night. And they'll let you get up there and do 5 minutes. Put 5 minutes of your best stuff together and hike up your big boy pants and go and just knock them dead. And if you do, that's great. If you don't, go back next time they have an open mic. You know, because you've obviously got something to say. There's a lot on your mind. You're just looking for a place to say it and do it and be it. And I, as Mark Twain said, I have the confidence of a Christian holding four aces that you're up to it. You're up for it. So, you know, just take a big bite out of it and let us know how it goes.
Well, that was another one of those high-quality lines. I have the confidence of a Christian holding four aces.
So, but, and that's not really why I called, but I am so inspired by, we take it, because I don't know if Emilio knows me, but I'm an old radio fool. Robin's an old radio fool. And sometimes we lose sight of the fact that not everybody is as easily wordy as we are. Okay. And sometimes it's an act of pure courage to get up and say something, even over the phone or over the Skype or whatever. So hats off to you. Where's my hat? Somebody has taken my hat, Robin. Well, if I had my hat on, I would tip it.
Yeah, well, have I got one back here?
I don't know.
I gave up fedoras a couple of years ago. Don't know why.
Ah, yes, the lovely fedora. I knew her well. She's the opening act in vaudeville. But, yeah, I'm tipping my hat for all
she had a fedora, and that was all she had.
And don't forget the fabulous Rhea sisters, Daya and Ghana. They were great. They were great. All right. Well, anyway, that's not why I called. Did you ever have a big wheel?
I was aged out before the big wheels came out.
Oh, damn it. Well, you know, but you are familiar.
I missed out on the Weebles, too, damn it.
Oh, they wobbled.
Sesame Street started the year I entered first grade.
I see, yeah.
And I was coming home from school and watching Dark Shadows anyway with my mama.
Oh, God. Jonathan Frid. Was that the name of the guy that played?
Yeah, Broadway? I do believe so, yeah.
I don't know why he didn't get a tie-in with Crest or Colgate or Ultra Bright with those with those fangs. Because, I mean, he was a toothy fucker. But anyway, I saw somebody.
By the way, it was just cute as could be. I saw a tattoo of somebody the other day, and they had a tattoo of two little dots on the side of their neck, and it said "Bite here."
Who was that author who used to do the books about vampires in love?
What, Anne Rice?
Anne Rice, yeah. My Lord, my Lord. Now, can you imagine? I mean, writing book after book after book about vampires. There for a while it was...
Yeah, horny vampires, right.
Horny werewolves, vampires, and what was the other subgroup? I don't know. It'll come to me eventually. I mean, I don't know. But you know what I thought about watching the hearings today, Robin?
What's that?
Could have been any number of things. Pick one. No. I was, you know, I've told you in previous communications that I've, with the 50th anniversary, I've been revisiting the Watergate hearings, the Senate Watergate Committee. And there are little gems that I missed back when I was watching them, when I was watching them originally in first run. And I saw one of the little gems the other night. They had John Ehrlichman up there for like 4 or 5 days. And there toward the end of his little visit, a name came out that rang a faint bell, and it was someone called Lewis Marks. Do you know who Lewis Marks was?
No.
And I kind of gave you a hint when I asked you about the big wheel, or if I had asked...
Oh, was that from Marks Toys?
Yes, Lewis Marks, back at the early part of the 20th century, started a toy company. And among his most famous toys were the Big Wheel and the Rock'em Sock'em Robots and all that. Now, you might say...
Yeah, we went over Rock'em Sock'em Robots, what, last week?
Well, yeah, because they're red and they're blue. They're just like today's political environment. And they're just beating the hell out of one another. But I'm sitting there watching it, and he said, Lewis Marks, now where do I know that name? So I looked it up online, and sure enough, he's the guy that did the Marks Toy Company. And if you're of my age or maybe slightly younger, you grew up watching their wonderful commercials on TV, okay, for all these toys. But his name came up during the Senate Watergate hearings when they were talking to John Ehrlichman. And I said, you know, Lewis Marks, and he's the founder of the toy company, I bought more than a few Marks toys over the years. And it came to pass, Robin, that as part of the Pentagon Papers investigation, and don't worry, I will tie this all together. I'm like Gene Shepard in that regard. The topic of the Pentagon Papers came up when they were questioning Mr. Ehrlichman, because Gordon Liddy and Howard Hunt went out to Los Angeles and broke into the psychiatrist's office of Dr. Fielding, who was Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist, trying to get dirt on him. And Daniel Ellsberg leaked out the Pentagon Papers. So you with me so far?
I'm holding my own.
Okay. So we've got Lewis Marks, and we got Daniel Ellsberg. We got the Pentagon Papers. We got the break-in to the psychiatrist's office by Gordon Liddy and Howard Hunt. Now, where do we go from here? Well, Daniel Ellsberg's second wife was Lewis Marks's daughter. And because of that connection through marriage, the FBI thought it would be a good idea to question Ellsberg's father-in-law, I suppose, to find out more about old Dan Ellsberg. Well, it turns out that Lewis Marks was also a good buddy of J. Edgar Hoover, and they used to go to the horse races out here just north of San Diego at Del Mar Racetrack.
Is that what they call it?
Yeah. What? No, wait a minute. You're...
Well, I mean, if J. Edgar Hoover's involved, there's got to be something weird going on.
He was not diddling the horses. Let me disabuse you of that.
That's a scurrilous lie, Wilbur.
That's a freaky notion. But anyway, old J. Edgar and Lewis Marks used to go to the horse races together. And the plumbers, you know, that was Gordon Liddy and Howard Hunt, they wanted to stop the leaks at Nixon's insistence. And, you know, they, the whole thing is the things that you can see watching old stuff that you missed the first time around, 50 years from now, I'm sure these hearings that we've been watching over the past few weeks are going to be available somewhere for somebody to pick up on things. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing. We learned, I think, from Watergate, although we kind of forgot some of those lessons.
Well, it's interesting you would bring that up, because I'd heard previously this business about how Bob Woodward has a new forward to all the president's men.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, wait, hold on. He kept a few nuggets back for the 50th anniversary so he could make a buck. Because I'm kind of with Flavio on this one. You know, if it's going to affect the fate of the republic, you think it might be a good thing to actually let the American people know it, as opposed to waiting for your fucking book deal?
Well, that wasn't my first question. I get what you're saying, because I thought that myself when I heard about the new...
Right, but what I was going to get as I was driving and listening to all this, I was thinking, you know, this is going to make one son of a gun of a summer super blockbuster movie for my granddaughter's generation. They're just going to be blown. You know, if there's still, and that was the caveat I suggested to myself, if there's still a United States, then.
Oh, there will be.
If this kind of information isn't verboten.
No. I there will be. We're going through a rough patch, I think is what it is. You speaking of Woodward, you know, he's got this new foreword to the All the President's Men 50th Anniversary Edition, Watergate Anniversary Edition. What happened? He did three books on George W. Bush, and then he did Peril. No, he did Fear, and then he did Peril, or maybe he did Peril and then Fear about Trump. What happened to all that book money? I know he doesn't have a bunch of ex-wives. And how many editions of All the President's Men does this make? There is the original hardcover, and then the softcover, and then the movie tie-in edition, and then there's one, I think, on the 30th anniversary, because I've got it, of the Watergate break-in, and now he's got... How many times can you sell the same book to the public without adding?
Do you know how many? Do you know how many different cuts there are of? Come on.
The memory book?
No. Shut up.
Lorraine?
No, Blade Runner. I never know which movie I'm watching. And there's so many different cuts of Blade Runner.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Ridley Scott tinkered with, well, the studios and Ridley Scott tinkered with that film the way Basho tinkered with a haiku about a frog.
Yeah, you've got your original...
Name movie. Me another radio program that has a reference to Basho's haiku about a fucking frog, Scott. One! One!
No, there's not one. There's just this one. And hats off to you. I found my hat, by the way. It's my actually not a legitimate hat. It's an Arthur Bryant's barbecue joint ball cap, which I've been wearing for years. I need a new one. Actually, I need a big old plate of Arthur Bryant's barbecue right now. Oh, man. See, in the Old Testament, when they'd wake up in the morning and come out of the tents, yawning and stretching and scratching and pecking, there'd be manna all over the ground. And I figure it's got to be one of three.
And you know what? When they got bummed out about all the manna, you know what they had? They had mayonnaise.
Well, except for Tracy.
Oh, God. What's wrong with me?
Hold the mail. But manna, I had a theory years ago. It was one of three things. It was either Krispy Kremes, White Castles, or Arthur Bryant's barbecue.
Chocolate covered cotton.
Was that what it was?
I'm just going for the other alternative from Catch 22. Here, this is some chocolate covered cotton, Yossarian. Will you taste it? No!
Oh, you're going to hate me for this. I've seen the movie, but I never read the book.
Oh, the book. The book is everything.
They say the book is much better than the movie. The movie was okay.
They tried really hard with the TV series. You know, George Clooney was involved. It's impossible to render it onto film. Yeah.
When?
Oh, what, 3-4 years ago?
Really?
Yeah.
What do you know what network? Because I don't remember that at all.
Oh.
It's probably one of those.
Maybe Hulu? Networks.
Oh, I say I don't have Hulu. That's why. My fault. My bad.
We're doing it again.
Yeah, I know.
But no, really, this is going to be a hell of a... I mean, and you know, there are actors who have not yet been born who are going to be... Well, okay, maybe an actor who has been born, who's probably like a kid right now, will play Nitwit Nero. I mean, that's what happens when you go down the rabbit hole of trying to imagine the future.
Well, it'd have to be an awfully good kid acting, or an awfully dumb kid.
By then the kid will be fully grown up and be a great actor.
Ah, all right. Well, who would we get? Ricky Schroeder wouldn't work.
Too old. No, I mean, there's no get. They're literally not even in the business yet.
what will movies cost by then? See, movies price themselves out of my range.
Well, I'm not. I can't speak to the economics of it, but you will view them inside your own mind via the plug in your neck.
Oh my God! Well, just so they don't pour any of that artificial popcorn butter down my gullet through that portal on my neck, because I don't need that. Don't need that at all. I'll take real butter, but that, what is that stuff? Coconut oil and yellow coloring and salt, plenty of salt. That ain't butter. That ain't even a, that doesn't even approximate butter. Got to be bad for you too. Did I lose you? I guess I...
No, I'm here. I was multitasking.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're fine.
No, I just dead air. You know how I got one dead air.
Oh no. I got to know. Do you have the DJ's nightmare dead air dreams?
No, I don't have the dead air dream. I have the dream where I'm in there in a perfectly good radio studio.
Naked as the day you were born.
No, not even naked. Nothing works.
Oh no, that's part of the DJ's nightmare. Nothing works. You can twist every knob on the old Gates board. Nothing's going out.
But it's worse. It gets worse. The cart machines don't fire.
No, of course not.
You're in a country station and the racks are filled with classical music. And I have literally awakened in a cold sweat more than a few times with that damn dream, and I'm sorry you mentioned that. Because I'm about due for it. I haven't had that nightmare in a while, and I've been out of radio.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, back, you know, I was mentioning I started filling in for Dr. Bill in 2003. I was having the DJ's nightmare probably at least once a month before I came back. The minute I got back behind the microphone wondering, gee, I wonder if I can still do this. I haven't had one since.
Yeah, but it's horrible, and it's so real. And there are other versions of it. I think it was Dick Cavett once was writing about the same sort of dream, but it's for people who are actors on the stage.
Well, it started out as, it's called The Actor's Nightmare.
Really?
Yeah, and there's, I'm looking it up now, there's a brilliant one-act play that is absolutely hilarious. It's by Christopher Durang, and it's simply called The Actor's Nightmare. There's a guy, he's an accountant, and it's a case of mistaken identity because all, you know, Shakespeare wrote everything, and so it's a case of mistaken identity. They mistake him for the understudy for the lead character, and the lead character's out, so they thrust him on stage. And he's never really quite sure what play he's in.
If I have that dream tonight, I'm...
And he can't remember his lines.
And you both, yeah. It's terrifying to be up there. And don't, you know... Don't let this stop you from going on stage.
No.
I don't see. I hear. I start the call with all manner of encouragement, and now we're talking about the actor's nightmare.
Well, I mean, look. You're doing no one any service if you don't explain the pitfalls.
Well, you know, the one and only time that I did comedy. I took that course to learn how to be a stand-up in three easy lessons, and the final exam was to do 5 minutes at a comedy club. The only thing that worked for me was the fact that the first Gulf War was underway, and I part of my 5 minutes, I kicked off with something. I took a piece of paper out of my pocket and unfolded it dramatically, and I said, the following act has not been... sanctioned by Iraqi censors or whatever, which was, nobody knows what that means now, but at the time, the news coverage had to be cleared by Iraqi censors.
Right.
Or Kuwaiti.
I tried it once. A buddy of mine ran a bar over in Beckley.
Yeah.
And I just got up and told a couple of my absolute worst jokes. And
how'd you do?
I got a laugh. Because, you know, it's all in the delivery and in the content. I mean, what's left? But sometimes I look back and I think about how many breadcrumbs I was dropping along the way. Like that parody of Brewer and Shipley that I published on Facebook in 2016, One Flush Over the Line.
Yeah.
You know, sitting in line at the Target restroom praying there's no transer in there. You know, why would a perfectly straight cishet dude write that, you know? But nobody asked. But that evening I comedy works best when it's personal. And so I took an old joke that I've always loved that always gets a big laugh, and I determined right off the bat that I was going to work blue. And so I said, you know, I've been married a while, and our wedding night was a little bit strange. I was very self-conscious, and we were done with the ceremony, and I sat down on the edge of the bed, and I took my shoes off and pulled off, and I said, you know, I was very sickly as a child, and I took my socks off and said, and my toes are really gnarled, and I said, I had a terrible case of tolio. And she looked at me and said, you mean polio? I said, no, tolio, look at him. And I said, she said, oh, that's so sad. And I dropped trowel, and I'm standing there, and my knees are all knocked, I'm knock-kneed, and they're just, it's just goofy looking. I look like some sort of demented bird. And I said, you know, I was very sickly as a child, and I had a terrible case of measles. She said, you mean measles? And I said, no, measles. I said, see how they're all getting? She said, oh, well, that's too bad. Well, I love you anyway. And then I dropped the boxers, and before I could say anything, she said, let me guess, you were sickly as a child and had a terrible case of smallpox. And I got a huge laugh.
Well, it's all in the delivery and the build-up.
And, you know, a horse walks into a bar, bartender looks at him and says, why the long face?
Oh, God.
Horse walks into a bar. Oh, Jesus, you've gotten me stuck. This horse walks into a bar. The bartender says, what'll you have? The bartender says, or the horse says, I'll have a martini. The bartender thinks, stupid horse. Horses aren't that smart. I'm going to fleece him. He says, well, that'll be $1,000. And the horse reaches in, pulls out the wallet, lays out the $1,000 on the bar, sits there, sips at the martini. And a little bit later, you know, standing there with his apron and his towel and, you know, kind of drying the glasses, the bartender looks up at the horse and says, you know, we don't get a lot of horses in this bar. And the horse looks at him and says, well, at $1,000 of a martini, I'm not surprised. Oh, I'm so ashamed.
And you said horse.
Yeah.
That's.
Well, the bar was in Southeast Missouri.
Well, you know, I kind of wondered where down there it was.
Yeah, yeah. Found that out. It's a dialect thing, Southeast Missouri-ish, and they say and St. Louis, and they say horse.
Yeah.
And fark.
Fark?
Yeah. And you play tennis on a tennis cart. You don't want to know what they call a fort.
No, I believe not. I may have to toss my.
You know, after a day, you know, when you hear 2 hours of testimony about how close your country just came to becoming a goddamn full-on fascist dictatorship, you got to have a little humor.
Well, Well, yeah.
But, you know, you got very close to some
serious original Dick Van Dyke show there. Oh, yeah. Because, you know, exactly. And nobody does that better than Annette. She just used to, oh, Rob. Well, we've lost generations X, Y, and Z now.
Yeah, we just cleared out the room. You'd think we had a fire drill.
Hell, it's entirely accidental that I even know about that.
Well, getting back on a more serious mode, I mean, because we are in perilous times. I was just thinking about it today, watching the hearings, that just as I was watching stuff that was real 50 years ago, 50 years from now, if we're still here and there's ways to transmit it, people are going to look back and wonder how we survived it, just as right now, looking back, wondering how we survived Nixon, because in his own way, he was doing a number on America and the Constitution and our form of government. And it was all entirely avoidable, but at least he had capacity. I think you mentioned this the other day. At least Nixon had the capacity as a person to feel shame and regret. Now, he didn't, I mean, when he said that he felt that way, not everybody believed him, obviously. But I think in the dark of night, when he was all alone sitting there walking up the halls, talking to the portraits of the old presidents on the wall, in his heart of hearts, he knew he blew it. Trump will never have the redemption that's possible in a moment like that, because he doesn't have moments like that. Introspection is just a high point word in Scrabble for him. He has no concept. It doesn't relate. It doesn't compute.
Well, you know, to a certain extent, Scott, I think we're still trying to diagnose him. On the one hand, he's brilliant at marketing or something, and I keep coming back to no, he's just a case of arrested development, potty trained at gunpoint, petulant, childish, and thinks he can bully and bluster his way through anything. I mean, do you think who was it? His last name was Welch, the guy who looked at McCarthy and finally said, "At long last, sir, have you
Joseph
no
Joseph Welch? Joseph Welch.
Joseph Welch. At long last, sir, have you no shame?"
Yeah. Have you?
You know, one of these days, somebody is going to stand up, and this is why he will never show up in front of the J6 Commission.
No, hell no.
Because at some point, somebody's going to look at him, this is probably his deepest, darkest fear, and go all Fred Trump on him and say, "Sit down and shut up, you hopeless moron."
Yeah.
And he won't be able to say, excuse me. No, you're an idiot. I'm not kidding. Shut up. You're a dum-dum.
I forget which news show it was, or film, maybe it was a documentary, but it was something several years ago. They were interviewing people who were in the first grade with him. And even then, he was a twisted little fuck. And the human part of me, God, I'm starting to sound like Spock. The fact that I'm a human being, there is some capacity for pity or whatever one feels when one encounters someone that's that fucked up, okay? But on the other hand, you know, I just kind of want to do a pilot on him and wash my hands and say, off with him, you know? Hand him the wood and let him march up the hill. Not that I want him to be a religious symbol, although there are people who have fervor for him and belief in him and commitment to him that takes on a certain religious attitude, as twisted as that is. And that's frightening. We've still got to work our way through that. You know, because the nitwits you have with the always, as the good Bible says.
Well, you know, the poor, the actual verse is, the poor you have always with you. And he didn't say poor what? The poor of brain? The poor of spirit? No, the poor of spirit are... No. The poor of conscience? The poor of morals? The poor of ethics?
And don't forget the meek. They inherit the earth, but not the mineral rights. Everybody gets screwed in
that. Yeah, but not the mineral rights.
That's true. But it's not.
Jeff Clark was looking out for the mineral rights there in the Justice Department.
He will never have that moment of self-actualization. It may not be called that, but getting in touch with oneself. And I think it was the musical Pippin, if you know that show.
Yes, quite.
I can't remember the lyric, but it's the sense of it is when you're trying to get away from yourself, and it's a long, long way to run, and you can't get away from yourself. Either you've got to encounter yourself full face, okay, and deal with it, and learn from it, and hopefully, you know, mature or grow or whatever it is that one does, even at his age. But nothing in his experience has prepared him for that. And people might say, well, how do you know? You're not inside of his head. You're not inside of his skin. Ooh, what a creepy fucking thought to be either place. But what I mean is, you can know by observing. They were getting down years ago, the psychiatrists who came out against Barry Goldwater, and they said, no, you cannot diagnose a person that you've never met or treated. Well, yes, you can. Maybe you can't put it down in ink, but you can certainly scratch it out in pencil. And you don't have to be a doctor, just observant, being an observant person on just basic human nature, you can see traits. You may not even have the right word for them, but you can see that something is not right in that guy's wiring, and it hasn't been either for a long time, if it ever was. And I don't want to make it bash Trump Day, but then again, and if he's a pinata, I don't want to touch the candy. You know, don't take candy from strangers. Don't eat none of that candy falling out of the Trump pinata. You don't know where that's been.
Honey, that's not candy. Baby, those aren't raisins. Those are roaches.
No, not at all. Is there a rabbit around here? Because those sure ain't raisins, those little brown things on the floor. No way. But the hearings have grown on me, I think.
You're going exactly where I was about to go, and that is, I'm afraid that somebody from fucking HBO is advising the committee, and that's why we're not going to hear from them again until sometime in mid to late July, because nobody builds up anticipation for the next season quite like HBO, although.
That's true.
Apple TV is learning the rules, the tricks of the trade, because they broke my heart a couple of months back when the announcement came out that we would not, in fact, see season 3 of Ted Lasso in September like we were all expecting. No, it'll be the end of 2022, and I'm like, oh, well, that means sometime in 2023.
Yeah.
And I spent a couple of days walking around going, damn it!
But see, on the other side of it, this story is so, there's so much, it's packed so densely that it's going to take another series of these sessions and these hearings to really get it out there. And I understand the timing is not optimum. You know, what with elections, how many months away? 4 months, 5 months? You know, the midterms, but that may not be the function The function right now is to unpack the suitcase and lay all the stuff out on the evidence table and pick up each thing and look at it and have people in to comment on it from their, you know, bringing with their comments whatever their expertise is. And like I say, they kind of grew on me to the point that when today's session was over, I'm sitting, well, then what happened? And we'll, like you say, we'll have to wait for 4, 5, 6 weeks. But it's a lot of stuff to digest and figure out.
It absolutely is. But I think we're both right in noting that there's a sort of who shot JR quality to this.
Yeah. Yeah, a cliffhanger.
Because, I mean, this really was. I mean, this was chapter and verse today on exactly how he wanted to make the coup work, and he needed the Department of Justice to make it work. And this Congressman Scott Perry that got mentioned today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the nice thing about it, and nice is probably not the right word, but you know how we've all been wondering when something's going to happen? I think it's about to happen. And if the FBI going to the guy's home, Jeff Clark, yesterday with a warrant saying, we're coming in.
Here's they put him out in the street in his jammies. That's the cry. How dare they make him stand in the street in his pajamas? But there's a larger thing, like this Scott Perry dude, and everybody else who's refused to come and testify. You know, Jeff Clark testified, because lawyer, and took the fifth 125 times.
Fifth.
But the fact of the matter is, Perry was subpoenaed and has ignored the subpoena. At some point in time, if we are going to be a functioning republic again, because right now I don't feel terribly functional, blowing off a congressional subpoena has got to mean something. Somebody's got to do some fucking hard time for this.
Well, there was a headline today. I almost sent it to you. Now I can't remember who it was. Somebody says they're going to come testify, but they have 5 conditions, and I didn't read what the conditions were. I'm scrolling down to see who the hell it was. God damn, these are long articles. No, that's not it. Hold on, tap dance a minute while I do this. Working my thumb. Oh, Representative Brooks. Did you see that in the Washington Post?
Mo Brooks, Lesper Ames? Which part?
Yeah.
That he said he'll testify, but only if they tell him in advance all the dirt they've got on him?
No, that's an actual story. Representative Brooks agrees to testify before January 6th committee, but with conditions. And you scroll down, he says he would voluntarily submit to a deposition if 5 requirements are met. Which, gee, I wonder what he wants. Well, you have to read the story. Let's see. He says, the denseness. Oh, he's requiring that the deposition be public and that questions be relevant to and limited to events surrounding the insurrection. Well, I don't think if you're going to come and testify, you don't get to determine how the thing is conducted. You're on this side of the bench, mother effer. I mean, come on. He also wants to know if the committee is going to ask questions about content found in statements and electronic or written communication, that those documents be turned into his office a minimum of 7 days before the deposition so Brooks can refresh his memory. Are you kidding me?
Well, that's what I said. I'll come testify if you give me all the dirt you've got on me.
Yeah. Well, I think ring up a no sale on that.
Well, I wanted to tell you, your neighbor Tamara, had a note for you.
She's called the men with the butterfly net, and she knows her.
No, she is not called that. Stop that.
Okay. All right.
Scott's advice about open mic reminds me of touring on an open mic stage and how after a while you learn how to be heckled and to dodge insults or water bottles. My friends and I brought pies with the promise to pie one another if we're boring, and now nothing can bother us.
Yeah. I never thought of pies. Pardon me, I'm chomping on some Nicorette.
I hope they
don't take that away. Their stop sale of the Juul vapor deals, nicotine vapor deals. The FDA says bye-bye to them. They'll take my gum when they pull out of my cold, dead mouth or hand or both. But anyway, well, I get the sense I'm rambling.
I think we both are, but that's okay.
All right, well... So, all in all, do you think the hearings are serving any... I sent you that thing about...
Yeah, I do. As they referenced multiple times, millions of people are seeing this stuff. And millions of people it affected one Republican congressman within the last 48 hours, the guy from Nebraska. We had the story yesterday evening. Who said, I don't care if he runs. I will not after I've seen this shit, I will not support him. Now, maybe between now and November, his house will get firebombed or he'll be rhino hunted by Eric Greitens in Missouri. By the way, that ad seems to be backfiring on Eric Greitens.
Oh, good. I love when that happens.
See, gun ad backfiring. Don't try this at home, children. And here's another beautiful moment. You know, the senior senator from Texas is John Cornholio.
Oh, yeah.
Tucker Carlson, Tucky O. Rose, testicle toaster, is braying and hooting about the incredibly weak and painfully useless deal that has been put together by the Senate. I mean, it'll do something if we define something in the loosest possible terms about guns in this country. But in particular, Tucky O. Rose attacked John Cornholio and Mitch McConnell for supporting this bill. Well, Tucky O. Rose called them apostates. Jeez. Oh, really? Because guns are a religion, I guess. And by the way, Now that the Supreme Court's done what the Supreme Court's done, is it okay? Because there's actually a philosophical debate to be had about the efficacy of a firearm as a self-defense weapon. Because basically, somebody has to start shooting first before you can call it self-defense and shoot back. And in the fog of conflict, if you happen to shoot the wrong person, there's a big problem that comes with that. And if you reach that Elmer Fudd moment where you go, no more bullets, and a little gray rabbit comes up and says, no more bullets, no more bullets, no more bullets. Well, all of that is obviated by a sword. And since the Supreme Court it gets all damp in their maiden forms over the right to keep and bear arms as enumerated in the Second Amendment, well, constitutional originalism would suggest that they weren't necessarily just talking about guns. They were talking about bows and arrows. They were talking about swords. I mean, militia members and whatnot carried swords. So I'm really curious to see, we're going to get a shooting gallery out of this, and it's going to have nightmare intended consequences, Scott. But I want to know if there's going to be a proliferation of sword carrying. I want to know if there's going to be a renaissance in the blacksmith's art And the idea of folding steel 1,000 times to make a truly magnificent piece of art blade, like, say, a katana. Oh, yeah.
What is that show that's on where they show that? It's on one of the, like, Discovery or History or...
Oh, I'm fascinated with it. But I want to know, I mean, I wear dresses now. That's a lot like a, you know, shogun or samurai. I guess I'd be kind of a ronin or rona. And I want to know if I can, carry a katana. I think I can.
Well, what is that? That's a sword, isn't it?
That's probably the single greatest sword ever manufactured on the face of the earth. The katana that was, katanas were carried by samurai. You know, I don't want to go heaving around some big old two-handed Scottish claymore or a pirate's cutlass. A rapier might not be bad. They're light, and they will... And I don't know if you know this story, but back when... what was his name? Edward Teach, Blackbeard? Was terrorizing, from the Caribbean to the Carolina coast. He and his crew carried great heavy cutlasses.
A Pontiac?
It was an Oldsmobile.
Oh, was it? I don't know. GM. I was close. I was in the family.
Yeah, I think the Pontiac was the Grand Prix. But no, they carried cutlasses. They used cutlasses because they were great, heavy hacking weapons. And the naval officer who finally took him down, of course, spread sand all over the deck to sop up the blood. And ordered his men to carry rapiers, rapiers.
Oh, yes.
Thin, straight swords with incredibly sharp blades front and back.
And make a delightful swishing noise.
Yes, they do.
They do. You thought I was kidding?
No, you're not kidding. And their instructions were it was the original rope-a-dope. And so they let Blackbeard's men hack themselves into a state of exhaustion, and then just went in and gigged them with the rapiers. And forged in fire, Emilio says is the name of it. Yeah. But yeah, the I think, you know, I mean, look at what an exciting place America is going to be. Did you ever see the Romeo and Juliet that starred Leonardo DiCaprio, and it was a modern-day retelling of the Montagues and the Capulets?
Years ago, but I must tell you, I am the 1968 version.
Kills me. Yes, absolutely. Michael York.
Oh, God.
And Olivia Hussey.
And the Friar...
Friar Lawrence.
Milo O'Shea.
Yeah.
Oh God. What? But no, I've got to revisit the.
Well, interestingly, in the Leonardo DiCaprio version, you know, they've got guns instead of bladed weapons, but he pulls out this big old .45 caliber. It looks like a 1911 Colt, but it's got engraved down the barrel the brand name, just like any weapon does. Sword. Because it's put up thy sword.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I mean, think about the blossoming of the arts we can have, as young gun humpers, and old alike. Shakespeare's for everybody. Can go back and learn that brilliant scene in the square of Verona.
Verona, yeah.
Yes. And do you bite your tongue at me, sir? I do bite my tongue. But do you bite your tongue at me? And then Romeo actually accidentally gets Mercutio skewered by Tybalt.
Yeah.
And he looks at Romeo and says, Romeo says, "Are you hurt?" And he says, "Ask after me in the morning and you will find me a most grave fellow."
Oh, God.
You don't get wordplay like that out of just standing and blazing in the fucking Walmart now, do you?
No, you don't. here's my question.
I'm not making any sense at all, am I?
No, you are. You're making perfect sense.
I'm kind of tired.
But if they want to make it as a revisitation to the Wild West, we've got to do it like it was done in the Wild West. And there were towns, when you got to the Welcome to Wherever It Was sign just outside the town, you had to give your gun to somebody during the time that you were in the town. I mean, that's the way...
Dodge City, Topeka, Dallas, Fort Worth, Tombstone, Albuquerque, Santa Fe.
Now, there was a reason for that. And one of the reasons was that they're killing people left and right because of why? Because your gun was on your left or your right hip. And easy access in a heated moment never ends well for anybody. So I'll buy the Wild West thing up to a point. If you really, folks, if you want to take us back to those grand and glorious days, you know, with a hearty hi-ho silver and all that, have at it. But you, there, no matter what dystopian situations involve certain requirements and rules. I mean, even that, even chaos, there's a logic to chaos. And they don't want that part of the deal. They want the part of the deal that is, I'll do what I want to do because I'm a free American. You know? And it's just, it's heartbreaking that in this year, 2022, as far along as we think we've come, we're reverting to shooting irons on the hip. And if you get a crossword from somebody, you can plug that bastard. And how is that making America great again? No, that's making America dead again. It's good for the sawdust industry because that sawdust is proven to, you know, it's better than fucking Bounty towels when it comes to absorption. Why do you think they put it on the floor at butcher shops, you know, in the meat department? Now you're getting me started. I was rather wound up to begin with.
You know, when we, down in the great Southwest, people can return to the, really get in touch with their heritage, and they can go with the muckaweet.
For the who?
The muckaweet. It was kind of like a cricket bat. It was the weapon of choice of the people of Central Mexico. And it's like a cricket bat or a fraternity paddle, more like a cricket bat. But all along and all the way around, both edges were studded chips of obsidian.
Oh dear!
One of those things could render a human being in twain with a single stroke.
Oh, I'm sure.
The only problem being that obsidian is friable and breaks rather easily. But, I mean, you can raise some hell with one of those. And people can, you know, if they want to get, and you know, people with the Central Mexican heritage can get in touch with their heritage and, carry a muckaweet.
But the
Supreme Court will not say dick about it.
But it all kind of begs the question, can't we just get along?
No!
Well, why not, damn it?
No, we can't just get along. We could get along if it weren't for the Supreme Court. At least we could work on it. But the Supreme Court was not put there for us to work on getting along. All of these things are the wet dreams of the Federalist Society, the NRA, the anti, you know, the misogyny industry. And they are a one-stop chop shop.
But I don't see the sense in building a future on wet dreams.
Well, there isn't one, Scott. There isn't
one.
Well,
I rest my case then. What is wrong with these people have gotten that frightened or that hungry for power?
Well, they don't think it through.
Well, they got to start listening to this fucking show. I mean, that's all there is to it. Send out invites to folks.
Well, you just got a note from Scary Jerry. Relevant Reddit post. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Jerry.
To equate and assume every person holding conservative viewpoints as idiots, rubes, rednecks, violent extremists, etc., assures the same reaction from a conservative regarding your own intent. Why so much vitriol? Is there no middle? Or will you only be happy when conservatism is dead and buried? That's
for me?
No, well, no, that's a relevant Reddit post.
Oh, okay.
And somebody wrote, the screen name is Don Shula Was My Homie. Points for that. It's your job to mitigate your people. Till then, you all fly under the Trump flag, the Confederate flag, or the piss yellow one. Lines have been drawn. Your kind have been killing unarmed children and churchgoers for years, and organized response is coming. Were we to wilt and piss ourselves with your threats of civil war, hypothetically speaking, of course, pull up. By the way, do you know how much actual rage is on our side because of Nixon's war on drugs? All the raids, all the prison time, all the broken families, all the $50 phone calls, all the lies, all the hate. You unleashed the race demons for tax cuts and Supreme Court judges. Karma is coming. Thank you, Scary Jerry.
She's not smiling.
And Randy Radar points out, you know, I had heard on NPR that cowboys really didn't shoot much back then because it spooked the cattle. There's probably truth in that.
Yeah, that's all you need. That's what? 20,000 head of beef.
Oh, great. Dumbass started a stampede.
On four.
Take his bullets away. Let him keep one in his shirt pocket.
That's right. Now, Barn.
Great-great-grandfather of Barney freaking Fife. Well, I got to get out of here, Scott.
Oh, don't go.
I'm worn out. I cannot. Yeah. It's been a long day on the road, but I managed to get my oil changed. And the brain in my car was beginning to harangue me over it.
Harangue.
One harangadangy.
That's right. They make that noise. Well, it's been an astonishing couple of weeks here with these hearings, and I'm ready for more. And I didn't like them kind of to start with, but they grew on me, and now I am.
No, I've been hooked from jump. More.
I just
questioned their efficacy, but I think the numbers are going to come in.
Well, I mean, the first session was 20 million. I looked in the paper, or not the paper, but the website, the Westminster Kennel Club dog show only got 2.2 million, which proves something. American viewers are more interested and whether or not we're going to the dogs than the dogs themselves.
Well, that, and it also proves that Americans are more interested in a bloodhound looking for Trump than a bloodhound preening around an arena.
There you go. And on that happy note,
we will call it quits. Scott, have a wonderful evening, my friend.
Kibbles and bits unto you.
And bacon strips.
Thank you.
Bacon.
See you, Robin.
See you, Scott. Bye. And there we are. Friday on the front porch tomorrow, and an $1,800+ fundraising goal. Wow, that's a little scary, but nonetheless, you know, we'll see how it plays out. Thanks to all of you. Thank you for joining in the program. Thank you to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. You know, we double new subscribers for the first month, thanks to Zed and thanks to Ralphs. Seven of them. And we could use $70 extra per month over at Patreon or PayPal. We really could. Because as it is, I think Patreon is a little over one, it's about one and a half days funding. But thank you all, Patreon, PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. The White Rose website is down, but Ben's working on it. Oh, well, thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. You prick! Wrong gender, hon. You prick! I'm still laughing over the horse joke. Oh, my God, I haven't laughed that hard in months. You know, the classic, you know, you can't improve on the classics. at $1,000 a martini, I'm not surprised. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, proudly a union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster. I'm hearing more and more about people who are picking up this Omicron variant. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Wear your mask in big, spooky, creepy big box stores and around people who might not be vaccinated. Please do that. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. And if somebody comes towards you saying, "It just ain't right to make a man stand outside in his pajamas," well, avoid that maggot like the plague, because, well, he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.